Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom that's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom. And always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more. And then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today, we continue our actor spotlight for Dev Patel with The Green Knight. It was released on July 30th, 2021. It was written for the screen by David Lowery, based on a poem by an anonymous writer, the Gawain poet, and directed by David Lowery. I'm Colton Robertson. I'm joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
Oh, what up, what up? Always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. Sorry, I needed to reset my brain when remembering how to pronounce Gawain.
Spelled Gawain, but I think
it's never pronounced that way.
Yeah, Gawain.
It would have felt wrong if they were like Gawain.
Yeah,
I'd have been like, oh, that's not. That's
so not, you did bring up about like this King Arthur and King, I don't know, a lot of
Camelot.
Yeah, and I don't know like any of this. Is he in this story at all, or is this like a new like
Gawain is a character within the Arthurian legend and lore? He is the king's nephew, King Arthur's nephew.
Okay,
they got that accurately. The thing that this movie changes from the poem, I mean, it takes a lot of liberties, The key factor is that Gawain is already a knight in the poem. He is Sir Gawain. So it kind of makes his drive in this movie a little bit more external. Instead of it being this vague sense of just honor and just chivalry that he is trying to achieve, it literally gives him a name that he's aspiring to. You know, he is trying to become Sir Gawain instead of, achieving the virtue that comes with being Sir Gawain.
I guess this poem by an anonymous, this is
Gawain poet.
Like it is, I guess that, I don't know. I've never, I guess I've just, I'm not in the know of all of this, which is, I guess I've heard, like, is this the Excalibur, like the sword that's
Arthur,
stuck in stone?
Arthur pulled Excalibur. Like they mentioned that at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I've
not
heard
the story of the boy who pulled sword from stone, but and that automatically sets him up to be less than also, this is not that guy.
Yeah.
So
I guess I've heard some of the story.
Yeah. And like, and that's the thing is that it's not like the modern idea of what a mythology is. Is that it was all crafted by like the same entity that came up with all aspects of it. No, not how Arthurian legend works, written by several people across decades and even centuries of just contributing towards this idea.
That's cool. That's actually
period.
Really cool.
Yes. No, it's not. It's no one thing. It's not like George Lucas created Star Wars. There is a, initial entry. I'm sure I don't know much about Arthurian legend myself, but beyond the basics, like you just laid out, but I did some extensive, semi-extensive research last night in between my two viewings. Cause goddamn, man, this is a fucking movie right here.
Whoa.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it.
Whoa.
The Green Knight is fucking special, man. How are you feeling about, let's talk Dev Patel specifically. That's how we tend to start.
This is all in anticipation for Monkey Man, and like I was already excited. I was already like in. Like Dev was showing me who he is, and like I was already there. And this one, I guess I've seen like before this movie, I saw one shot, and I think it was the opening shot, just to his head on fire and him looking all kingly. And but it was just on like TikTok or something, and it was like I was like, "Whoa, what movie is this?" And then we do the spotlight, and I'm like, "Ah, 'tis the Green Knight." And I'm like, "Okay, so that's all I knew." And but no, he just kind of has only gotten better and better and better as time has gone on. And this one was no exception. Yeah, this is his best movie on the spotlight so far.
I'd say best movie period.
Yeah. This is incredible. I don't know. It was, I don't know if Monkey Man can do it. You know, I'd invite it. I'd gladly invite it. But, before this point, I thought Monkey Man was going to be the number one easily. Mm. Now I don't know.
Now it's got a challenge. It's got a challenge. I get that. And I'm with it, you know. I like what Dev Patel brought to the table in this one. What I love about the idea of Monkey Man is how personal it is. It is written, it is directed, it is led by Dev Patel. So while this movie might be all around a good fucking movie with Dev Patel at its center, that movie is going to be Dev Patel through and through. So it's going to be a different kind of special, I think, and it'll be interesting to see how they sort of compare, because you're right, these are going to be, I have faith, and I shouldn't go in thinking Monkey Man's going to be the best of his filmography, but he just has such a inventive creative spirit, he's got such passion behind it. His press tour and the lead up to it has been so invigorating, it's made me even more excited. So like I anticipate that this man is bringing the heat with Monkey Man. But like you said, it's going to be tough to beat this one, especially his performance in it. He goes through such a hero's journey. It's really fascinating to be a, you know, fuck up of a character and to continuously think of yourself as more than... but also recognize that you are less than what you're supposed to be. There's such a conflict in the character of Gawain that he brings to the table that's so fucking fascinating. He manages to pull off this bravado that makes him feel like he's self-assured. But there are certain things that he's faced with when he recognizes, oh, I'm not the knight or the nobleman I'm supposed to be. And I think Dev Patel is to be owed the credit for that deeply, in the performance and the dissonance that Gawain experiences, because goddamn is Dev good. I love Dev Patel.
And I love just all the back and forth that there is. Like the first time I did watch this movie twice, the only on the spotlight for me to do that. I guess I started it last night. I knew I wouldn't be able to finish it without being fully aware and awake and everything. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it the justice. I'm going to find a good stopping point, and then I'm going to continue tomorrow. And I did that, and then I finished it, and I'm like, okay, I need to watch this again. And I have the perfect amount of time to do so. So I did. And the second watch, it reminded me of The Killer, was like the movie that like it reminded me of, and very different movies. But the first time I watched The Killer, I was sort of like rooting for him, or like not thinking of him as like the fuck up that he is. And I got the sense that, you know, Dev or, you know, Gawain was a fuck up, you know, I got that sense on the first watch more than I did on The Killer. But the second watch, it was just abundantly clear. Like it was like he is failing at every single step along the way. Like, I don't know. And that's
there's this fascinating dissonance between modern sensibility and the idea of what Arthurian legend is supposed to be. The ending where the main character dies is typically not the happy one.
No.
That is the happy ending in this one, is that he is. That is a fascinating place to reach.
Does he actually die? Or is this the final, you know, even with all of his failures, you know, he did fail every step along the way. He probably deserves to die here if that's the game, you know, like he failed the game horribly. But in this last moment, he recognizes all of that. He's like, if I do continue, this is the life that I will bring, you know, as the life I've been living. If I continue, you know, in my current path, this is what I will bring forth. And then he's like, okay, you know what? Yes, I do deserve to die. If that is truly what I will become, yes, kill me. And because the green, you know, the line delivery, it's sort of, there's an
it's certainly purposefully ambiguous.
Yeah, there's something like whether, you know, kind of like that Jack and Hagar moment, you know, grinning at Arya leaving, sort of, you know, sort of thing it reminded me of, or like now his training is complete. That moment of realization is the training. It just took him failing at every point to get there. You know, it wasn't the way that you would want the training to go, but at least he still got to the crux and the most important lesson to learn, sort of thing.
Yeah. No, and I think that's fair, but I think that there's a interesting idea that even if he had every single test,
mm-hmm.
he still would have died. I don't think it matters what's deserving or not. It's completing the game. The agreement that he set out to from the get-go is that you will return the blow which I deal unto you. Now he's accepting that what he did at the beginning of the movie is dishonorable. I should not have done that. And therein it is what I deserve in return. You know,
I tend to look at it as the most.
Oh, I mean, like that's when I'm looking at the movie going, oh, we're about to fucking eat. When he walks into the fucking throne room.
Oh yeah, dude, that
like at the round table.
Wow. Yes. Like a whole, was this, I don't know, a combination of so many things into one. And maybe this is why just kind of like Arthurian legend is sort of, I don't know, it's new to me. And like, this is kind of my first in on it. But what I can kind of grasp from it is that it's just a story that's been told over generations and generations. It's a hero's story. But this sort of seems like a side story of it. Like King Arthur is the main character.
Yeah, the King Arthur
usually
story is typically the main story told. This is definitely not like a main mythology. This is something you would... No, I mean like... And this specific version of it is taking... I mean, but that's kind of the point of Arthurian legend, is that you are able to tell the story however you wish to tell it, which I think is kind of what the title cards are emulating at the beginning of the movie when it flashes through all the different Sir Gawain, Sir Gawain, all the different fonts, all the different versions. It's because there is no one way to tell the story. This is the way that they are telling the story.
Wow. God damn. Yeah, that's why I'm so excited to see Monkey Man, is because he's so, like, just to be in this movie and to be like a part of it, and he's not the full creative source of it, you know, he's just an actor here, and then to see what he can do fully on his own after having a Wes, you know, like after having a little bit of Wes Anderson, after having this, you know, he's got the combination, you know, he's got everything that you need. But no, this, I don't know. I'm very, I can't believe, I guess I've never been, not introduced, but like I haven't found my way into Arthurian legend before. This is so timeless. I feel like it's, you can reach it at, there's so many sources that you can get it.
And
get
it's, I mean, it, like it speaks to Star Wars to a degree, you know, the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell sort of stuff. Like that is kind of what it's getting at the heart of, you know. I think that there's a lot to like here, and there's a huge inspiration for this movie from Ron Howard's Willow, which I absolutely adore. We've talked about that several times. David Lowery actually had the idea for this movie, or the idea that he wanted to make a movie like this, while building a Willow diorama in his backyard with Willow action figures, which is super cool. There's even a little homage in the middle of the movie where there's a skeleton in a like a chained cage hanging from the... That's how you're introduced to Val Kilmer's Mad Mardigan in Willow. Is that
like
he's
on the crossroad when he's riding his horse and he knows where to go? Yes. That right there. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's a little homage within the movie to Willow itself.
That's cool.
And then another cool connection is that Ralph Ineson, the actor who plays the Green Knight, and Aaron Kellyman, the actress who plays Winifred, both go on to be in the Willow television series, which you cannot watch anymore, which fucking blows, unless you pirate the high seas of idiocy.
yeah, I, for legal reasons, I would never partake in such a thing. But
yeah, never.
But no, this I'm glad this one's at least still available. But I will be. I don't know. It was. At least the streaming version was still very beautiful. Like, oh my God, how much of it is practical? Like, obviously, like some of these castles aren't, you know.
No. Yeah, it's, there's real, a lot of visual effects coming into play.
Wow.
Here.
Did it look like they, I don't know, like some of these castles looked so good. Like, I mean, I guess it was, what, this is 2021. Okay. So yeah,
It was filmed in Ireland, mostly, and there are a few castles in this movie that exist that are real castles. Mm-hmm. Like they are out there. Like the spiral building that his mother goes up into and conducts the spell that creates the Green Knight, seemingly. Mm-hmm. Or brings about the Green Knight, like calls to him at least, if he didn't already exist. It's hard to tell.
You know,
whichever one. Mm-hmm. That building she's climbing up to go into is a real building. That is a real castle that is in Ireland. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that I would be fascinated to learn about, because this is a beautifully gorgeous movie.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to learn that, like, when I saw that this was filmed in Ireland, I'm just like, God damn, Ireland's beautiful, dude.
Game of Thrones, like, has to, you know, Game of like Thrones, every,
I mean, like, you haven't watched Banshees of Inisherin yet, but that is a gorgeous movie.
Seems,
and,
yeah,
I
if
mean,
you ever need a place on Earth where you need lush green or oceans as well, you got the
Italy,
ocean,
you know?
You got the green, you got the mountainside, you got, yeah, you got anything you kind of need in Ireland. So maybe that is it. But the, like, landscape shots, I loved whenever they just stuck the camera on Dev just for like a minute straight. Literally, they're like, all right, here you go. It maybe, you know, maybe it was like a transition, like there was like a title card, and then it was just, you know, here's him traveling or whatever. But
that's one of my favorite things about the movie, though, is that they just let you sit with Gawain in his moments where he is in between things, you know, like when he is just traversing, when he is just traveling, they let you sit in that. And I think it's a wonderful choice. You know, it causes gorgeous imagery, like that overhead shot where he's wading through like knee high water.
Oh, my God.
And it's straight above him. And it's, you know, like, it's fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adore it.
Whenever he's first setting off to leave, it was the shot I put in first initially on my first watch. And it's whenever there's kids behind him chasing him, like, ah, go, we have a sword for you, or, you know, whatever. Like, and he's just paying them no attention whatsoever. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, riding on his way. But, you know, it just sticks on him for a solid minute there, just following him. No, you know, the kids eventually, they give up, and then it's just him riding. And, I mean, and then eventually it pans over and shows him and the mountainside, like, along, and I was like, oh my God, like, wow, what a, thank you. I was like, thank you for not deciding just to, I don't know, stick the camera back wide and, I don't know, show it more. Like, that was just, it was very visually
gorgeous,
impressive.
But then
I watched it on the second watch. I didn't notice those kids in the first place, really, or like the meaning of the kids. And then I'm like watching the second time, I'm like, oh my God, like, this dude's kind of like, this dude's, what the fuck? Like, you are failing so hard, dude, even right here. Like, just give them something. I don't know, anything, man. Literally, like, I don't, anything. Yeah. Like, just acknowledge them even in the first place. And like, so that, it like got me to realize, like, even like just the change from first to second watch. But,
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch, because, like, you anticipate that in an epic fantasy film, the character you're following is a hero, and that is who they are. And I think that this is a fascinating take on a hero. It's a much more relatable story to be this failure to launch, stuck in his way, can't get his ass off the ground, just trying to let the days kind of waste away, you know? Like, they tell the queen and king, whenever they're like, I think it's the queen specifically, Lysa Arryn, who tells him, you know, don't take your seat along these knights idly, you know, do something.
Mm-hmm.
Basic. She's like, don't just end up here. Go and fucking...
Yeah, like, you don't have any stories yet, you know? That's mm-hmm. the point. Yet. Go do... Have your stories, you know? You have mm-hmm. to... You don't just sit around and have a story come out of nowhere. You know, you gotta actually do something to get there. And yeah, that was, you know, she's the one to, like, in the background be like, have courage, you know, or like she's the one that's, like, really rooting for him, you know, it mm-hmm. seems like. And but, and that's the thing, is like, how much is, like, the mother, like, I'm trying to like, she's obviously has a control over a lot of things, you know, she's,
oh yeah, yeah.
But like, how often, like, are the king and queen completely just puppets for the mother, or
no,
like, are they
no.
eventually themselves too, like, you know, like,
I think I'm of the mind that they're in on it. I don't think that they I don't think that they necessarily know exactly the extent to which his sister is willing to go to, you know, get him off his, but remember when he, like, whispers in his ear, he's like, remember, it's just a game. You
that's
know,
true.
Like,
he does say
there's
that.
A little bit of
yeah.
a knowing, like, okay. I know something's happening sort of thing. So I'm of the mind that there is a, and that's vague too. I think
it felt
I think
the mother was
lot,
going
I
behind
love...
their backs though. I don't like it. Like it felt she, because like, wasn't she saying, like literally saying his words at one point? Like, I don't know. Like, I guess maybe that just shows that they were orchestrating it together, maybe, sort of thing, instead of her literally
that's a good
him.
Point
so
that's, that is the
I don't know, but I you might be right though. I guess it felt like there was just some witchcraft magic something going on, you know, and she called she either births or summons the Green Knight, however the fuck that happens, you know, and there's obviously some magic going on, but it felt that there was some genuineness behind the king and queen, like they weren't
oh, yeah.
purely puppets, you know, that they I guess yeah I do kind of like that they were in on it as well.
Yeah, and I don't think that they, like, because the other thing that is damning is that I don't think there's animosity or like from the mother. I don't think the mom is trying to get her son killed.
No,
I don't think that's the case at all. Mm-hmm. He gets himself killed when he decides to chop off the head of an unarmed opponent.
Yeah,
that is a challenge that the Green Knight presents, mm-hmm. and he's supposed to deny it and deal unto him what he would have done unto himself.
That's
which is
the
likely.
Part that, like, I remember on first watch, like, I heard that part of, like, him, like, his whole deal, and I'm like, I don't think you're really. Wait, you know, like, that's kind of the most important part of the whole thing, and you're not really thinking about that, you know, like, does
well,
he just,
and that's,
maybe he just
again,
thinks he'd
king,
be dead, you know, so he wouldn't be able to kill him, obviously,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that's
but,
part
like,
of it. But...
I don't know. It's like, if it's, like, just do a little, you know, do, like, just, I don't know, like if that's the whole game, and it's, mm-hmm. he's, you know, doing, I don't know, like, what, I guess, what is the correct move? Here is it to lay down your weapon as well? Is it to not literally do nothing, or is it to just give him the smallest little nick possible? Like, do you have to
probably the smallest nick?
You have to injure
would...
him in some way, right? Like, that's the
I'm
whole game.
So.
Is that,
that
there
is
has
game.
There has to be some blow?
Strike
done.
Me, and I will return the strike. You know, like, that is so. There's also that moment when the king asks him when he volunteers. He's like, "Do you understand the game?"
And he's
and
like,
he's
"I
like,
think so." Yeah,
I
he's like, yeah, I guess he's not even, yeah, he's still not sure. Yeah, I get, like,
he's like, yeah, sure, go for it then, you know? I think that the king is genuinely like, don't, like, the game is a game of honor. Like, you are supposed to uphold, so, like, he lays down his weapon, and automatically when that happens, you are to not kill him, you know? Or
yeah.
try to kill him. That is the...
Yeah. I think... what he did at first, the kind of like, ooh, you know, kind of like make a move at first just to see if he goes for his weapon, you know, if it is like a trick. That's what I would do. I would see if it is yeah. a trick at first to see if he is still intending to kill me. But then once it is fully, you know, it's like done. I feel like I guess if a strike has to be made, you know, that's one thing. But like if he just lay down his weapon. That, like, I think that's the move. You know, you lay down your weapon and see. I don't know. Or is that just an infinite standoff? You know, are you there forever?
Yeah, well, because that's the other thing, is that it is the Christmas game, you know, that it is. He thinks he has the shortcut to greatness. You know, he thinks that line you went with that I almost why greatness? Why is goodness not enough? You know,
yeah,
he calls to the people. Remember what happened this day. You know, remember this, what happened on this Christmas day, and cuts off his head. You know, he's like, this is my shortcut to glory. All of a sudden, I'm taking my place at this round table, not idly. You know, I've done something worthy of their attention, worthy of them, at least in his head. But what he doesn't realize is it's the opposite. It is not worthy of this table. It is not worthy of them. I remember even watching it on the first watch, also kind of in that place where you're going, you still anticipate that he is supposed to be like, right and good, and you think that he is a good guy, or he's not a bad guy by any stretch. I don't want to, but
everyone's cheering there, like the gallery is cheering.
Like,
and
I remember being kind of like, oh, okay, but yeah, I wouldn't have thought that was a good thing.
Yeah, King Arthur's like, you know, he's taking his sword back, very like, wow, like, you know, he's very like, they're disappointed. Clearly, his mother, you know, she's apart, you know, away, but she. That's whenever she takes her blindfold off and drops to her knees. She's like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, like, she's like, holy shit. How could you have failed this so hard? And, but the, you know, the music, like the moment visually, it appears as if he did the right thing, but the audio, the music that is playing in this, and Dev's performance and the people who actually know him, the way they're reacting, all point to failure, like all point to uncomfortable disappointment, like very wrong, you know? And I don't, that's why the visual language of the movie is incredible. Like it doesn't hold your hand. There's not a lot of exposition. There is not, you know, like the only exposition is kind of his deal is like, here's my fucking deal. And then the rest of the movie is just, I don't, like, lessons, like lessons that he literally goes through and that is not just being told to him, you know? So like, and I don't know, why
it is absolutely for you to discern as well. There are, and I, like, cause I texted you after the first viewing I had and was like, we're going to need to talk through that. You know, like because you go in thinking a certain way, you know, like it is just the setting, you're following a protagonist, it's fantasy, it's all this, like you're like, so whenever we get to that ending and it's all crumbling and it's all falling apart, I'm like, fuck.
I was like, God, this sucks. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, this is tragic. I was too. I'm like, this is like, and I get it. I'm like, I get why it's all bad. You know, like it's a shitty ending, but that's the point. And then when it was brought back, I was like, thank fucking God. I'm like, because I thought, like, I didn't think that, I thought he actually ran away and this was like actually the events that were occurring. And
I did too.
And when it cut back, I was like, thank fucking God. I'm like, this, I love this. Yeah, no, like now. I'm like,
and it also lets you know how much you actually cared about Gawain. You know, like how you actually wanted him to succeed, wanted to see him do the right thing. And when you watch him run away, when he goes, wait, I can't do this. I can't do this. You go, like, you know,
I never really want some, you know, I don't wish for someone to die, you know, but like, this is like, dude, like you failed. He's failed everything before this. I'm like, take at least do this right. I'm like, man, like, holy fuck. And yeah, like every time it's just like, wow. Yeah. This, like, I guess
that's why my favorite line comes from that scene right before we go into that flashback, right before he runs away, whenever he's like, wait, is this really all there is? And he goes, what else ought there be? The Green Knight says, you know, like,
whoa, like
you agreed to the game. This is the game.
Yeah.
What the fuck else did you think I was going to do? Like it, you know,
if you don't got, you know, yeah, like if you can't back yourself on, you know, your own word, if you're not even, you know, that honorable, you know, it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? You know, sort of thing. And it's, I wonder, like, I guess with the Arthurian, like, legend sort of thing, like, is there a known story of this and then it went down a different route? Or, like, is, you know, is, I guess, is there a common way that this story is usually told and we got a different version of it? Or is this completely kind of its own take of it all?
I'm not entirely sure. I just know that. And I don't know if Sir Gawain existed prior to the expansion of Sir Gawain's story, or if,
like, does the Sir Green Gawain's Knight story character exist at all?
I don't know. That is part of the poem. I don't know if that's part of, like, main canon. It's so awkward to talk about these things.
Yeah, like, what's on the sacred timeline of the king, of the Arthurian mythology. But
so this character does exist in Arthurian legend, but it's because of this story, you know, and the way that the story has been told, as far as I understand it.
I'm just looking at it wrong. I shouldn't be thinking of it like an extended universe.
And here's the other thing, is that, like, if the character didn't exist prior, it does now, because that's the point of Arthurian. And there is an interesting thing where the story of Saint Winifred is not a part of the Gawain story. That is actually not, it's a different nobleman and a different story that does apply really well to Gawain, which is why it was roped in. And I mean, it makes perfect sense to rope it in here, because it is, it probably, you know, the whole, it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, is the Saint Winifred interaction.
I do have that as one of my potentials. Yeah, that is.
I mean, it's fucking good, man. And I think that whenever, it's just all so inconsiderate of him, you know. He tries to guise it as being considerate. You know, he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't know anyone was home. I'm going to leave. It's all good. And she's like, no, wait, did my father? He's like, I don't know your father. Sorry, I'm going to get out of here. And then, you know, she asks for his help. She floats towards him. She's like, he's like, what the fuck? You know, all that, just continuous failure after failure after failure in terms of chivalry, like just absolutely bombing. And then whenever she's like, I need your help, he's like, what do I get in return? She's like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? Why the fuck would you ask me that?
I just told you that a dude came here. He like did all this shit to me, cut off my head, and then threw it in the stream. And you're asking.
A nobleman like you. Was that you? Maybe it was you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what she says, you know, like it might. And she's basically saying it might as well have been you, you know, like
it was,
you don't help me here,
was
you don't,
it Barry,
like,
what's his character in the scavenger?
Scavenger.
Is that who, because the axe is there in the, in her house, that, like, whenever, right?
And I don't take that to be literal, no.
So the axe, because
Sash also reappears later.
Okay.
That was taken by the scavenger as well.
Okay.
So I tend to think
Where's the sash reappear at?
The sash reappears during my favorite scene. The lady gives it to him. She says she created it.
Okay. Yeah. And he's like, where did you get? That's right. Okay. That was weird. I didn't. Okay. So maybe it isn't a literal tracking of these items.
And that confused me too, because like whenever he's like, because I missed the little flash cut to it sitting there, so then like there's like another scene where he's like walking with it, and I'm like, when the fuck did he get this thing back? And then I watched it a second time and I was like, well, that doesn't really help. You know, I was like, it's just fucking sitting there.
Because I guess I thought, you know, the scavenger takes the axe, he runs off, he's like, I'm gonna be the one to get glory, whatever, you know, I'll take this story on, whatever, I guess. Is that the idea, that he's like, I'll be the one to get my head cut off? Is that the idea?
I'll complete the quest, like, I'll, you know,
but
I'll,
like, the quest is to die. Isn't that known? Like, isn't
I don't
it,
think he knows that, no.
Oh, okay. I guess, but like, the whole story is like, everyone knows, like, in the bar that he goes to, it's like, oh my god, this is this is the guy.
Yeah.
This is, and he's like, how great of him to go to meet his death, basically, you know, like everyone knows he's going to die, right? Because
I wasn't sure because he comes from a war, like a, the other side of the tracks, basically, you know, like his people are fighting against the noblemen and all that. So I'm not sure how in the loop he was, but regardless, I think that, it more than anything, I think it was just a, you know, when it comes to character motivations, it ultimately comes down to testing him. And they tested him and he failed, and his failure resulted in that, you know, the first little foreshadowing of it, of what comes later in the movie, you know, like, if he were to give up here, if he were to not get off his ass, if he were to just lay down and die, he would lay down and die.
I liked that. I really did. Like, I don't know. It was visual completely, you know, it's like, it's just what he's seen in his head. He's like, damn, yeah, if I don't do anything, this is what's going to happen. And I also really liked the, you know, whenever you're first introduced to the scavenger, he's like, well, yep, all dead, literally everyone, not even anyone to bury him, you know, but the earth will swallow him up, you know, he's like kind of talking like that, and like it'll do its thing, no problem. It's like the cycle, and like I feel like it was kind of the same thing, like that's maybe what was going through his head, was he was like, oh wow, like I'm alone here in the woods, no one is going to be here to help me, if I don't do anything I will die, and I will just, you know, no one will know it. This will be the end, sort of thing. And and then that's what gets him to be like, fuck, no, I gotta go. Yeah. So like,
well, that's the other thing that makes me go, how, I don't think we can take much of it too literally either. You know,
like that's what he is seeing, you know, sort of thing, or like that's what is.
Well, I just mean like in terms of the character, the scavenger and stuff, like, does he have motives of his own, or is his purpose to serve Gawain's narrative, and that's all he does? Is that what his existence is to test him, and then there's nothing beyond that, you know? Like,
it seems like it. Like, it kind of does seem like that. I would like to say,
and I
that,
think that's
know?
What every, I think that's why, you know, the, my favorite scene is, I called it the last temptation of Gawain, which is whenever he is in the bed with the lady, played by Alicia Vikander, who is also Essel.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is another thing that leads me to believe that these people aren't real. He tells them that if you come back, we won't be here. If you know, like, you come back this way, you won't see us. We won't be around, you know, like, and he says, you know, I have business to do. I have to go somewhere. But like, is that why you're going to be gone? Mm. You know? So like, I think there's also something here that is a little ethereal. Like it's not real.
It's like the
it
manifestations is. Of the lessons he's learning. Like, like exactly. She is like lust or I guess, what is there a fit like in Arthurian? Do they, I don't know if it's called lust or like, if,
I mean,
I don't know.
That's what she describes it as. So think, like, that's what I would take it to be.
I feel like know? I feel like what is ringing a bell to me is like in Arthurian legend, like he beheaded him on a star, and like like a knight, like to be a knight. Like I remember like something about a star, like five things of the star, like the five something of a knight. I don't know, is like somewhat ringing a bell.
The five tenets of knighthood. She
maybe
even,
that's it. Okay,
yeah. Dean even mentions it at some point in this movie. And I don't know them off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it's honor, chivalry, valor.
Oh, okay. Looks like there's a lot. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, okay, five here, and then a true. Okay, wow. Yeah. So courtesy. Yeah, and that's Winifred, I'd say, for courtesy.
Failing.
Just failing that shit. Honesty,
lies to the lady about where he got the bell.
That's true. Yeah, like, you know nothing of love. No, I don't. No, like, we could definitely do this right now. I'm definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Liar.
Valor, courage. I think maybe just the end. Or just kind of the whole. I don't know. Maybe everything. Honor, the first one. I'd say.
I mean, like, there's overlap
over,
in a lot of it.
And generosity, are the five. So I guess, okay, Wow. Okay, I really that is that's pretty sweet.
Generosity
though.
Doesn't give to Barry, doesn't yeah. give to Scavenger, honor, beheads an unarmed man, lies to
asks
the lady.
For something in return to like yes, you know, from no Winifred.
Like it's just he's completely failing at all of them except for his final one, which was courage, which is he finally achieves one of them at the very end. But yeah, no, I my favorite scene is definitely the that last interaction where she is giving him the sash, giving returning it to him as she like fucks him basically.
I was wondering what actually went down there.
Couldn't really tell. I don't know if we're talking handies or if we're talking real shit or anything.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. But whatever happened, you know.
Either way, he came.
Yeah. That was clear. That was on screen. I mean,
that was
that's
wasn't quite clear. You know what I'm saying? that's
it was but, not clear. Yes, it was not clear, which made it very clear as to what happened. No, yeah, this was definitely the failure of what chastity was. I guess that wasn't even. I guess that's what I thought one of them was.
I mean, just it's a fail of all of it. It's not honorable. It's not courteous. This is the wife of the man whose home he's in. So like this, like there's nothing good about the action being taken. He is giving in to lust. He is giving in to his worst impulses to allow this to, because he even his initial impulse is like, we shouldn't. It's wrong.
Yeah.
And she's like, come on now. And he's like, okay, you know, like, so
he
knows what he's
supposed,
and that's the other layer is that he knows what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what is right. And he continually chooses to do the selfish thing. And, that's kind of what ends up fucking him in the end, you know, but, yeah. And there's, it's just a beautiful scene. I loved, I mean, Alicia Vikander, I love that the cast in this movie, we've got a couple Oscar nominees and an Oscar winner in Alicia Vikander there as Essel and the lady. She won Best Supporting Actress about 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago for a role in, I can't remember the movie. Can't remember the movie, but I know she's won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar. Dev Patel getting the Best Supporting Actor, not, you know, same year, I think, or close to it anyway. But
I didn't know she.
Yeah, no, it's...
she ended up being my favorite character of the movie. Actually, it was an interesting question that I had to ask myself. Because you know, I'm like, is it the main character? And I'm like, well, I don't think so. He kind of fails a lot. Fails a lot of very important things and makes a lot of decisions that I definitely don't like. I like the journey that he goes on. I like the story that's being told, but. As far as the character goes, actually not. But then Essel and the lady. So I guess I don't... I'm picking Essel mainly, the non-lady version, I guess. But her performance was really good both ways and both, you know, characters she played. But I really liked Essel and that my line came from her, you know, why is greatness, you know, why greatness is goodness not enough. And then just that's where like the true tragedy of the ending was for me, was seeing like what he did to her. I was like, like all this stuff was bad. And I'm like, whoa, I'm like, dude, you're throwing like everything away. But but on the flip side of non-Essel, the lady gives me my favorite scene of the movie, which is right after yours. And it is whenever they get into the question of why is the Green Knight green, the lady asks, and I don't know. I guess I wasn't thinking of it before, and then she was, you know, giving all of these metaphors, and you know, red is the color of lust, red is the color of you know, kind of greed, all of the bad, and green is. The after, the rot, but also the life. It's like death. I don't know. Green is very kind of encompassing almost. It's kind of like the cycle, I feel like, is what green sort of represents. But then red, I felt like it also paralleled with whatever the Lord, Uncle Owen,
Joel Edgerton.
Was given us here. The kind of how, like, on the outside world, the green, you know, it's very chaotic, it's bad, you know, it seems like, but it's just the way life is. It's just how it goes. And then every man should have a home. Every man should have a fire within that home. You know, very warm. The scene looks red itself. It's very warm as well. And I thought, like, I don't know, it was, the visual imagery was playing very well. The performance of the lady and, you know, the Lord going off, and then like what it meant for Garwin, it was just all playing like all at once, and I'm like, holy shit, this movie's incredible. Like, that's, it's kind of when I had that moment of like, holy fuck, like what a movie I'm watching. So that's why it got the scene nod from me. But
no, and it's worthy of that, man. That's a it also lays to bear the very essence and thematic elements of the movie that become most important. I think that is the most important part of the movie, is the time he spends at the Lord and Lady's castle. I think that, like, obviously all of it's important, the entire journey is, but I feel like that's when you really start to realize what the movie is and what it's trying to say.
You get this, like, about portrait, but picture taken, like, you know, he was in the camera. That was, you know, like, and I've always wanted to do that with my window. I, you know, like, You can do that with any room. If you have a window, you just have to have a pinhole, and then I don't know, I guess find the focal point to get the actual picture. That's a whole different thing. But just to get like the outside view into your room as like a projector, I've always wanted to do that. And then like I saw this happening, I'm like, oh, is that what she's doing? I'm like, no fucking way. And then like I thought like she was going to trace. You know, I thought it was just going to be like a projector and then like kind of trace it and still paint it herself. But then the fact that it was just kind of like a picture, like it was literally like a Polaroid sort of thing, you know, I thought that was really cool. I don't know. That was just a really cool scene that.
I loved all the stuff that happened there. I love that the old lady with the blindfold. Seemingly only he can see her.
I guess it doesn't really make sense for her to be there. The only other person we see like that is his mother, and the other, I guess, witches. Are they witch? I don't know. Is that like wrong to call them witches that are there? It felt like there were like
that's what they're doing.
Like three other witches there. It felt like there were four total. You know, she was the main one.
Part of this movie? Like, doesn't she ask him, do you believe in witchcraft?
Yeah. Oh, and, okay. Yeah, I think. Oh, okay. And yeah. Like, yeah. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah.
Well, he goes, yes, I believe it's all around us, you know, like, because his mom's a fucking witch. He knows.
Okay.
He knows that's the case.
And so I guess, I don't know, maybe it's this is him seeing her is the part that's interesting. You know, if he were not to notice her either, then I think it's clear that it's just like, this is the mother checking in on whatever's going on. But the fact that he can like see her, and he's the only one that is like being like, why the fuck is she here? You know, like, maybe the Lord and the lady, they do know that she's there, but they're so used to, you know, it seems that he's, you know, he has some misogynistic traits to him, the Lord. He's very, you know, pessimistic in some way, very like brute force. You know, every person should see a hawk kill a horse in their lifetime. That's like, oh, well, I don't, maybe, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know. But like, you know, maybe I was thinking like, this is his mom, you know, his mom that they're just, that she's, I don't know, needing help to be taken care of because she's so old, but then like forcing her to be blind, you know, is a very, it seems that there was like, that they would be making her be blind. I don't know. It was very, I don't know. I was very like, I didn't know where to land on her at all.
Yeah, no, I take it to be a presence that is, if not literally his mom, meant to represent his mom. You know, she's literally always there watching over him, always around, around the corner, kind of being there, overseeing the ongoing test. And she's there.
Yeah, that's true.
During the final test.
That's true.
You know, watches the whole thing happen. So, like, I think that that's, I think it's just kind of another layer of it. I think there's this really interesting thing when it comes to, I've questioned the, how literally we can take all the characters and if they're there, are they real? What's the deal? What's going on here? You know, and I think that kind of culminates in relation to your why is the Green Knight green thing. Who is the Green Knight?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Winifred says, Green Knight is somebody you know, and there's this really cool moment that I'm interested to know if it's noticeable on streaming or if the 4K really helped me, where the Green Knight's face changes. Did you see that?
Like whenever he wakes up or like whenever he like is there?
It's very brief. It's in the night. It's in the night. Dev Patel's there.
I felt like
he's
was
looking
a
at
sort
him
of...
and his eyes open and his face shifts several times. Like the creases of wood kind of dissipate. He becomes more clear and he evolves from being Joel Edgerton, the Lord, into the lady, into his mom, and finally into him is kind of what it looks like.
Oh, I didn't get that. Yeah, no. Whoa. That's pretty cool. I saw kind of a change happening, but I guess I didn't see.
I mean, like, it's evolving. It's not, and I'm going with, maybe I'm projecting that onto the movie, but that's what I see. You know, like, I'm like, especially the final face is his. It is Dev Patel's. Like, that is
okay
where that face ends. That is who he's looking at when it's looking back at him. So I kind of view the Green Knight to be sort of, like they said in the movie, it will overcome all. Eventually, from dust we came and to dust we will return type shit. You know, like that is,
yeah,
that is what the Green Knight represents.
The obvious answer would just be like, it's his mom. It's something that his mom conjured up and it's just a test, you know, to make him famous and give him what he needs to succeed if he makes the right decisions himself. But then, you know, at the end of the movie, it's more clear that it is kind of not himself, but I don't know, sort of a representative of just life itself, kind of. I don't like,
yeah, and all that. There's this fascinating dichotomy of the red versus green, the natural versus the heightened virtue, you know, like the idealism versus realism is sort of how I look at it. And I think the Green Knight kind of represents all that is natural, like natural state.
Yeah.
Is not the heightened, noble, virtuous like you do have to earn that. You do work towards that. It's not something, some people are born that way, but clearly Gawain was not, you know, like and I think that it represents something he's chasing. He quite literally spends the entire film trying to find him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that when he finally finds him, he becomes that virtuous, the courageous, you know, like in it. It's fascinating to watch that sort of unfold. You know, it's tough to really wrap your mind around all that the Green Knight kind of is, because like you said, it's kind of everything. You know?
Yeah,
it is.
It's every lesson wrapped into one sort of thing. And the literal embodiment of it, which is, it's hard to put all of that into one being, you know. It's weird, and that's why it kind of has to be this unhuman thing. Like, it would be weird if it was
just a guy.
It wouldn't really make sense. But I think, like,
that's why he appears ancient, and that's why he appears like he's always been and he always will be.
I got the idea that, like, red was also like, that's when you're alive, like that's that the blood running through you, when he was like, you have to have, you know, walls and then a fire within those walls pumping, you know, keeping the spirit alive. It kind of felt like he was like kind of describing a body as well, like the human body. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you need your body and all your blood inside and your heart to keep that going and the fire going, sort of thing. And that's where the red, it's not always bad. It's not always like it's representing lust or the greed and only the bad, but it's like it's when you're not, I don't know, just when you're alive, you're red. When you're not, you're green. But like, also green is life at the same time. It's, I don't know.
And
it
also
is...
red, it, like, and that's why, like, my shit kind of, like, I felt like I kind of collapsed in on myself with my argument earlier, because I think red also represents that certain, like, the heightened virtue, the idea of what mm-hmm. being a knight is, like, that is what you vie for, that is what you want to be, but the inevitability of the green creeping in is always there, you know, like, eventually it will overcome you, it yeah. will take you down, it will, like, you will return to the dirt.
I think the literal imagery of him setting down his axe and life literally spreading from that, you know, like, I think is... They're trying to say that, like, I think the spilling of blood, like, you never want to see red. You know it's there, but you never want to see it outside of the walls, you know? Like, the second that blood is spilled, like, that's something bad has happened, you know? I guess there's not really many ways in which blood is coming out of your body, and that's a good thing. I think maybe, you know, maybe, and that's why, like, even before he beheads him at the beginning, there's already blood, like, blood splatters. There's all, like, he's seen that. He knows that blood is going, like, that's what he's thinking, is blood has to be spilled, you know, sort of thing. And I think that's the first initial wrong, is that blood, like, it should, that's the last resort. That's the ultimate, like, even a knight who is trained as a killing machine, you know, like, that they are known to be able to be, if someone's going to attack a knight, good luck to them, you know, like, you're not gonna win, but it's, they have that power, but only use it whenever it's necessary, I think is maybe where they're trying to get to, or something, because it is in modern time, you know, like, obviously we're not in armor and fighting with swords and all these things right. anymore, but there's still that story to be told, and of just what a knight represents and a good person, you know, is what they're getting to.
But, oh, absolutely. You know, I think that the why greatness is goodness, not enough, is kind of the heart of the story, is that he's trying to achieve greatness the whole time, when all he really needed to be was good. And with goodness came greatness, you know?
Yeah.
Once you achieve goodness, greatness comes naturally, but you need to be good in order for that to accompany it, you know? And I think that the end, whenever he's like, good, now off with your head. You know, like, that means that shit. Bro's going to cut off his head. Like, that's just how it goes, you know? But it's triumphant. It is.
He said it in, like, kind of a joking manner. Like, kind of like, I don't know. Like,
I took him to be proud. I didn't take it as a joke. I took it as, like, a...
Yeah.
You've made the right choice.
Like, this is the point. Like, now you've gotten there. He knows. Like, because before it was, every time he said, wait, 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 it was in the most cowardice, you know, coward way possible. And he, you know, running away, everything. And the throwing of the sash, if they're all in on it together and they know what everything represents, you know, and all.
Yeah, because his mom and the witches create the sash initially, and she tells him, you know, when you're wearing this, no harm will befall you. When you are wearing this, everything will be okay. When you're wearing this, you'll make it home, I promise. Like, at the very beginning of the movie, you know? And so he decides to keep it on in that vision. He decides to go home. He lives a full life. You know, his blood is not spilled. But everyone else is, you know, he dies alone, he dies unhappy, his children die, his loved ones die, there's nobody left except for him in that throne room when his head collapses to the floor. And I think it's just kind of a example of, you can live your life a coward and you can die sad and alone, or you can live your life with courage and die here proud.
I think it's just, the movie is so open-ended that you can project a lot, just a whole lot into it, because it is so ambiguous and open. But I loved just the, whenever we were in the forest and how they shot the, like, it looks so big. Like, it looked huge, and I don't like it was calm, like it was ancient, like you. I don't know, like that. That's always the idea I get whenever I see just like a forest in movie, or like I guess what I'm getting is like it will be here. It was here long before us. It'll be here long after. Like, and that's, you know, even the scavenger is like, yep, the yeah, no one here to bury, but the land will suck them in, and no one will even know. And it's just the way everything goes. It's just the cycle of life sort of thing. And like, it's a weird thought, but like to think that we are the ones being farmed, you know, for like Earth on a grander right. scale. It's weird to think about, but kind of, you know, like, at,
oh, yeah, that's
like,
the vision.
Like oil, the, what runs our world was dinosaurs millions and millions of years ago that have just decomposed for that long. So like eventually we will be that, you know, like it's just resources for a later day. But right now we are alive and conscious, you know, maybe that's what red, I don't know. Whenever you're like your own, you know, you green is it, you know, the earth, everything, but red is whenever it comes together to form like your life, you know, whenever you're alive in that moment, because everything in my body right now was on the earth before I was here, and everything will be on the earth whenever I, well, maybe I'd like to die on earth, ideally, but who knows, yeah. Who knows? And what we got going on in
going.
The future, but yeah. Everyone else before me has lived and died on earth. So I don't know.
Part.
Yeah, some astronauts out
almost,
there.
Almost entirely.
Some dogs.
Almost.
Yeah, some animals that are out there, I guess, that we sent, never got back.
99.9999% all living creatures ever.
Yeah.
Lived and died on.
That's a tough club to get into.
That is. But it's an honor.
I don't know. It's a lot of just animals that had no idea what they were doing. They just got strapped in a rocket and never came home. But
yeah, poor guys.
Space
yeah.
race. But
this
no.
fox would have known what was going on. That's my favorite character.
I saw that. I opened up the sheet a little. Like I forgot when I opened it up, but it was to put. It was the line. That's whenever I would have first opened it up. Was the greatness line. And then I looked over and I saw Fox, and I'm like, I'm like, interesting selection. He's popped up like one time so far, I think. And I'm like, I wonder what could make him the most interesting character in the movie. So it was, I don't know. I had a keen eye on the Fox for the rest of the movie because of that.
I liked his presence. I liked the Fox's presence. It was cute. You know, it was down to ride. It presented like one last little, you know, challenge for Gawain before he faced the Green Knight. You know, I think that it was the Fox's job to give him one last out.
Yeah.
You know, you can turn back. You can go. It's all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything will be okay. If anyone knew what you were about to face, they would gladly turn around and run away. You know, like it's telling him, don't be courageous.
Yeah.
Go. Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Hey. That is an option you have, and
which
yeah,
is another reason I think that it's also his mom is what I kind of take the Fox to be, you know. I kind of it's kind of the mom realizing that he has failed, that like the path he's gone down, there is only one solution, there is nothing else he's heading towards besides death, and she selfishly acts in a way that he would have and tells him, you know, turn around, go home, please.
Yeah.
You know, and
the first interaction he has with the fox is he throws a rock at it. He's like, hey, go away, hey, get away. And then like it's like, okay, fine,
comes around the corner.
I guess if you want to come in, whatever, you know. And it's like, maybe that's a failure right there, you know, just like nature, like a fox. Like if I saw a fox, like I guess they can be mean, you know, they could do some damage, but I don't know if I'm going to be immediately like, hey, get the fuck away from me.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I don't think that's my initial reaction. If like a lion or like a cheetah, I think I just respect them enough to like, I'm not mess, you know, that's not like, get the fuck away from me. I'm getting the fuck. Yeah, I'm getting the fuck away from them, you know. That's, but I don't know. There is a lot of just little failures he has to that it was like he couldn't be the favorite character. Like he is the performance, like Dev. My God. Like okay. I don't think that's within debate. And
like there are good performances. There's a lot of great performances in this movie, man. Yeah. I appreciate obviously Alicia Vikander and both the lady and Essel's role. She does a fantastic job. Joel Edgerton, not a lot of screen time, but what he does as the Lord is
I
liked
really him. Good. I really liked him. I'd like if we were doing a little mini like awards, you know, or whatever, I think like a supporting nod for him out of the, like supporting actors go for this movie, like he was really strong in his role that he had.
I mean, I loved the gentleman who played King Arthur as well, and obviously I'm a big fan of Lysa Aaron, but you'll whenever you decide to dive deeper into the Mission Impossible franchise, you'll actually come to know Sean Harris, the gentleman who plays King Arthur, as one of the most harrowing villains in Mission Impossible. Very, very good in those movies. I believe it's a Fallout. And I mean, I think he's in a couple. I think it's Rogue Nation and Fallout. He's in both of them.
Wow,
really good.
Not have got that vibe from him here. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, he's an ominous motherfucker in those movies. Plays like Solomon something.
Solomon.
Okay. Yeah, Solomon Lane.
Wow. Yeah. Here, just kind of a dying king is what it looks like. Just on his way out. Dude, Obi-Wan Kenobi'd. You know, he was like.
Yeah, right.
Deuces. Here's my sword. You're knighted. I'm out of here. And it's kind of why I thought like it literally was like a sort of like he has served his purpose as well, you know, for well, I guess does that actually happen? No, that's in the future.
That's part of the vision.
Yeah, part of the vision. So that doesn't actually happen. I get duh. Okay, hello. I was thinking that for some reason this actually is happening.
Yeah, there's some brilliant visual choices in that part of the that vision part of the movie where he's been a passenger. He's not, you know, he's not the driver, and he's watching all of the stuff happen, you know, like the camera always makes a point to show Dev Patel's face like watch as it transitions into something else and watch as it transitions into something new. And that final camera turn mirrors the one we saw earlier with the scavenger. Whenever we see his skeleton on the ground, when it pans all the way around the woods and circles back around to him, it circles all the way around the room and shows his head fall off.
And the little play carts that are like being shown to the children, like they had that little you know, to show the season changing or whatever, little circle thing and spreading the story of him, you know, he was supposed to be a very well-known hero.
That was also a funny part for me too, is I was kind of like, what the fuck did he do that was worthy of being story worthy at the beginning? I was like, yeah, he killed a giant.
I think it's
fucking guy.
Just
another one, part of the challenge.
Just because you accepted death, maybe. Like, maybe, like, it's wrong that he beheaded him, but I think it's like, damn, you literally know you're about to die in a year. You know, this guy has a year left to live. He's about to go get his head chopped off. I don't know. Is that the idea? Like, like, he says, remember this day. Remember what has happened to everybody, you know? Like, I have chopped off the head. I am deciding to do this. This is my choice. I know what, you know, seemingly I know what happens to me in a year. So I don't know. Maybe it's just like,
that's the announcement he's proclaiming, but I don't think he does know that, you know,
but that's what the people think that he thinks. He was stupid enough to not actually know what the challenge was. Cause he's like, do you understand the game? And he's like, I think so. I think he was just not actually aware, but everyone else, that's why they cheer, is they're like, damn, you made the sacrifice so none of us had to, you know, sort of thing. Like, we, you know, one of us would have had to step up for the king, you know, because that's the right thing to do, but you're the one to do it and take the fall for us. But that's the thing, is that he shouldn't have had to take the fall in the first, you know, he failed the test, you know, the game he failed. But I think maybe that's the people's version of it, you know?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it must be. That would make sense. But yeah, man, I don't know. I loved them. I thought it was absolutely riveting. One that I didn't anticipate loving as much as I did. And
yeah, no. Yep.
Man, I'm there. I absolutely adored it. Like, I'm so glad
I've seen it twice, and I think I'm gonna, like, I'm probably gonna have to watch it again, like, soon. Like, to, I don't, yeah, like, it's crazy. And not, I don't want to, like, I kind of came in saying, like, this is just the best dev movie there is. David Copperfield was awesome. I loved that movie, too. And I will return to that one soon as well. This one just kind of shook the game up a little bit more.
Right. This one's better. You know, I think Copperfield's more fun. It's more lovable.
Mm-hmm. Mr. It's a different Dick, kind, you know, of employment. Yeah, that's a more comfort. This is.
I didn't cry with The Green Knight, yeah. Which is rare as far as movies I love. I usually cry at some point. I could tell that my mind felt like I wanted to whenever it cuts back to him and he's like, all right, off with your head. But instead, I, like, just smile, like, really, really big. Yeah. Like, that's what happened when they cut to The Green Knight, like, the final title card, mm-hmm. The Green Knight, and I just sit with it. It just makes me smile real big. Yeah, that's just kind of it.
I don't think there was even really, like, a tear-up moment. Like, I, you know, maybe
which I think speaks volumes to how well done of a movie it is.
Yeah, when
to be able to love it.
Winifred? Is that it, Winifred? Mm-hmm. Whenever he puts her head, like, back on and, like, the light shines through and it's kind of like a, I don't know, it wasn't like a, like, I didn't tear up, but it was kind of like a final rest, you know, sort of at peace. It sort of felt like that was like a nice-ish moment. The music was really
nice. Yeah, but it didn't.
Nice, but no tear. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, any tearful moment. I don't think there was any. Like, that's the most emotional moment
that
I can think of.
Tearful. They're breezing through. They're letting it, like, because that's the point, you know. Like,
and a lot of the tragedy, like, I guess, of his future, it wasn't like tears. It was just like I was just like in shock, like, especially the first time, because I thought this was actually happening, and I'm like, no, I'm like, no, this is so bad. But oh no, this was. Dude. I don't know.
How off with you?
In all, like. In my, I don't know, this one's up there. Like, this was just cool. It's unique, too. There's, I mean, I don't, it looks.
Yeah, I've certainly never watched another movie like it.
Yeah. I don't know of anything that compares to it.
Yeah, very, very singular. But does that mean we're ready for a rating? You think we're there?
I think we are. Yeah.
All right, before we get to that, if you would, head to patreon.com/pennybloompod, where you can find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like, and $3 a month, you can support the podcast financially, which is huge, because it costs me money, and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Head to Twitter, follow at pennybloompod, follow on Instagram and TikTok at pennybloompodcast. Remember to leave a 5-star rate and review wherever you might be listening, and continue to download. That's a huge help. I would love it. But yeah. How are we feeling? I mean, like, it's my favorite, and it's the best.
I mean, I just checked my top 100 list movies, and I haven't updated it with, like, a lot of newer ones, but it's, like, in the 20s, or, like, maybe the 30s, but 20s is looking right. So, we gave Copperfield a 9.25 enjoyment. That one just has a lot of literal fun. And, you know, so I don't know how much that weighs.
Also makes me cry a lot.
Yeah.
That movie made me cry.
So I, like, and this is just, like, we said we didn't cry.
It's a different kind of enjoyment.
So,
it's
yeah.
an awe, almost. Just kind of being like, holy shit. Like, this is incredibly well done. Yeah, I started creating a second top 100 list of my other, for an eventual project down the line. And it landed, I haven't completely formatted it, but it landed in the 10s on that one. So if it landed in the 10s on that one, and I already have a top 100 list, I would guess it would probably end up about 20s, 30s, 40s.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah, it's there. So, like, I think I enjoy it more than Copperfield.
Oh yeah, I like it more than Copperfield.
So
I'm
like,
with that.
And I don't.
Mark
is it
9.5?
Yeah, I think it's. I guess there is some hesitation. You know, it's not. I don't know why it's not a 10. It's like I kind of feel like it is almost though for some reason. But like I think like 9.75 would be. I'm either 9.5 or 9.75. I guess is where.
I'm cool with the 9.75. Yeah, I mean, like, I think the story.
I don't know. I did rip it right off again. I did, like.
No, I mean, I did too. It's the movies I watched back to back. I did the same thing with The Killer, though.
Okay.
And it's because it's magnetic. For me, it's magnetic. Mm. It's not necessarily like I do love the movie, but it's not a lovable movie. It's not one that I'm going to return to because I'm just like, oh God, this makes me feel great. You know, it doesn't. It's it spends a large portion of the runtime just kind of interested, fascinated. I don't know that I would necessarily label it a great time. And again, it's a good time, but it is because of that curiosity, because it is striking at the heart of a lot of human stories without being incredibly human itself. And I think that that's a really tough line to toe. I think it does a really good job at it, but I do think that there is just a little emotionality missing for me to be able to put it at 10.
Yeah. There have to be, I don't know what to change because I like
it lacks...
how, what it had, but,
no, it's just not that kind of movie, you know. Like it's just not that kind of movie. There's not. I don't know where that would have placed. I don't know how you'd fix that. I don't think it is a thing to fix. You know, it's just how I feel about it in terms of my enjoyment of it. If I'm putting it at 10, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. It moved me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm never moved by this
movie. And there's no hesitation with a 10. If it's a 10, you just know. And I don't know, maybe have you ever seen any other Arthurian movies?
It's been a long time because they're not typically this dark and advanced and gritty. Like this is a fucking dark Arthurian legend.
Like Excalibur, okay. I've never seen that, but okay, that makes sense. Excalibur,
and that's more of a children. Like, I mean, it's not a children's,
but like the Holy Grail, but like 'tis but a scratch. You know, is that Arthurian or is that just they? I don't even know if King. I don't even know if it's like that at all. What movie? Yeah, in the Holy Grail. I don't know.
The Sword and the Stone.
Yeah,
you know, like that. That's an animated Disney film. You know, like it's this is definitely in a league of its own, even when it comes to Arthurian film adaptations.
Because
even the poem,
that's what I want to understand, that when was that poem written?
Hundreds of years ago, long time ago.
Just by whoever, like it, they or they specifically wanted to be anonymous, you know, sort of thing, or it's like not known. I guess anonymous sort of leads me to believe the creator wanted to remain anonymous, because if it was just unknown, I feel like it would be unknown. Like they wouldn't say anonymous, it would be unknown. Anonymous usually means the creator or the original wanted to be that way. But
yeah, it was written in the second half of the 14th century.
Okay. Yeah, so quite a long time ago. Wow.
Yeah, like
just
1300s.
This is a single poem? Like a
pretty expansive poem, I imagine.
How long can poems get? Like poems
pretty lengthy.
Like a page though is like what I'm used, you know, like they can fit on a page.
Oh no, I mean like it,
cuz when does a poem
it's 101 stanzas. 2,530 lines.
Okay.
So it's several pages.
Not a book. You know, I was expecting maybe like it's actually long enough to be like legit a book, but that's like if you were to put that in a normal size book, I mean, that'd be like 50 pages, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. That might even be overshooting it a lot. Could be like 10 pages. But even that's like all of this story is in that poem. Or like, I guess it's probably just like the big beats, you know. He went to learn generosity and failed miserably. He went to learn this lesson, failed miserably. Okay, I guess it's not a 2-hour movie where they have a lot of time to breathe, but I don't know. I don't know. Now that I'm kind of in the Arthurian game, I don't know. I'm very interested. I'm very intrigued to learn more.
No, I am too.
But
okay, the print length is 190 pages.
Okay. So actually long. It's I was not overshooting it. Okay.
Well, and it's also due to the formatting. You know, if you do have a standard line by line, I mean, like, lines are short in a poem.
It's true.
Or they could be longer, but, like, it's very... The structure is extremely important to poetry.
Yeah.
So
not necessarily length is what defines it. Yeah,
it's a different sort of thing. But, Yeah, no, I mean,
975,
I'm comfortable with that. It's one, I mean, like, it was instantly one of my favorites ever, but I can't put it on the level of my favorites ever, you know. One of my favorites ever, yes. My favorites ever, I don't know.
Man. Yeah, he's hit the curve. The curve looks really good. The enjoyment curve from Last Airbender? Yeah, looks really, really good.
I imagine so. I mean, quality-wise, it's not far off from being that level either. It's a fantastic movie. I mean,
what did we give Copperfield? 8.
This is a minimum of 9.
Dude,
yeah.
Visually alone. Like, holy. I was just really taken back.
I mean,
the use of visuals. Like, it was like the visual language was huge in the movie. Meaningful, like they've written well, like every character was very, very important for the story. Almost literally, that was their purpose, you know, like, and that made it just write itself very well. So, like, I mean, I'm thinking 9 is pretty fair. Like, I don't know.
I think 9 is almost fair as a floor.
Yeah, like, that's Darjeeling Limited is a 9. 925, that's Fantastic Mr. Fox. Little Fox there. Moonrise Kingdom, another 925. French Dispatch is a 9. Asteroid City, a 925. The Prestige and Dunkirk are 9s, and Tenet is a 9.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's either a 9 or a 925 then. I don't think I can go north of that. Because it has the grandiosity, and its visual flair is astounding. It had a little bit of the modern lighting syndrome at points that I didn't love. There were parts that were at night that were beautiful and beautifully lit, which kind of made me question why there were other parts that weren't.
I think it's we saw real lighting and then we saw set lighting is like it's it whenever it was VFX versus practical. And that's you just can't emulate real light. You know, it's just. I don't know. That's too difficult. Like, especially whenever you have shots of light coming through, like a stained window or like a window with a lot of bars, and it looks just beautiful. Like, you just can't emulate that with the effects. And but
to go even further, you know, like I think the movie's extremely well lit at most points. There's just a couple points, like when they're out on the water with Winifred, like when he's about to dive into the ocean. Beautifully lit scene, you know, when he's eating the mushrooms, you can hardly see it.
Yeah.
You know,
in the cave.
Really,
yeah. And that was a weird, like throwing it to the fox. Like, I don't know. It was like kind of the only time where I'm like, that was done just a little straight. Like everything else is done beautifully and with like precision and things. Yeah. That was a part that
I think it was
out.
Just to point out how hungry he is, his survival, how difficult the journey's becoming, etc. You know, like I think I get it. It's part of the journey, but Yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, visually not as acute, and then it transitions during that scene into something that's visually fucking beautiful when he,
bro,
the
blood or like the smear on his hand that turned into the green, and then like he wiped it off. I was like, whoa, I've never gone there.
And then he
in
trips out
yet.
And
yeah.
sees the Green Knight as a tree and in the distance, lightning strike. Yeah, like. So, cool. I mean, it's visually brilliant. It's really well performed. I love the ambiguity it's written with, mm-hmm. and I think it works to its favor. I think I'd be cool giving it the 2.5 bump to a 9.25. I think I'd be cool with that.
Okay. That would shake it out to a 9.42, which IMDb, I guess, hates this at a 6.6 is what they're giving it, which...
No, this is definitely a polarizing one. It either works for you or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I had... My Letterboxd mutuals, it was fascinating to see the mix going on there. Mostly high, you know, 4, 4.5, 5, a couple twos. And I read their reviews and they were like, what the fuck even was this? What did I just watch? You know? And like, I think that it has a little bit of that Wes Anderson syndrome where it's just not going to connect with some people.
You're forced to look deeper into this movie. Like you have to, it's, you know, a lot of people, in English class or whatever, it's like the wall is red, you know, and it's like, oh, well, why is the wall red? Well, the wall is red because it represents blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, actually, in this case, the wall's just fucking red. Like some people, I don't know, like, I think just enjoy simpler stories, not because they're simpler people. It's just, I don't know, that is just, it is nice.
That is...
It is just nice to have a movie that you don't have to really do a lot of work yourself. But then,
no, I mean, like, this movie requires thought.
You got to be into it. Yeah, it's you got to put the time. So I guess
and
maybe...
it's magnetic, man. That's another thing I didn't mention is that, like, the first viewing, it was it felt like 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like it felt its length the first time I watched it. The second time I watched it, it was a fucking breeze.
That's true.
And
yeah,
because the first time I'm trying to figure out what's
it
happening.
Was taxing, like just kind of taxing
like
on your brain. Yeah, it was a workout almost. And then
and the second time I'm mostly because I had a gap between my viewings of a few hours, but a few hours to think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I ended up watching it a second time because I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I tried to turn on something else. I watched the first like tits of something else. Then we started going back and forth when you started your viewing, and I was like, "This, I'm going to watch The Green Knight again."
It's back on. Yeah, it. I don't know. I guess I don't have anything to watch until Bad Batch. I don't know. Maybe 3 times in one day might be a little much, but I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have a little conversation about what our plans for tomorrow are after we sign off here. But at a 94%. That's rocking it there, the 94. Green Knight. Far and away, I got to imagine the highest rating we've given a movie in 2024, besides maybe Guardians of the Galaxy, and even that, you know, quality wise, I don't think we put on the same level.
Yeah, it would only be a comic book movie, right? It would have to be a comic book movie.
Yes, yes.
Then it's gonna be tough. Nope. Guardians of the Galaxy was a 9 flat.
Yeah.
And that's the highest it got since Dark Knight, probably. So,
yeah. No, and I mean, so definitely the highest, the best movie we've watched this year on the podcast, far and away by a safe margin, it sounds like. I can't wait to catch Monkey Man in theaters this weekend, baby. We will be back next Wednesday to cover Monkey Man, written, directed, and starring Dev Patel. Yeah, I am so very excited. I'm so glad we ended up going with Dev Patel as our first actor spotlight. I feel like it's paying off huge for us. Makes me feel very happy to be covering his movies, and feel like I like him more than I ever have. So I'm so very excited. In the meantime, we will be covering The Bad Batch this Friday. Very excited for that, as this week brings us season 3, episode 10 and 11, right?
10 and 11. The double. Oh, yeah.
Yes, we got the double episode this Friday. We are continuing our Game of Thrones rewatch podcast, Winter is Blooming, on Mondays. And that's it's very nearly,
episode
very nearly
5.
Reaching its end.
Yeah,
it's not a good one. So got that to look forward to. Mm-hmm. But within the next couple weeks, we are also going to be starting John Wick. You know, after Monkey Man, after the action excitement, we're going to be committing to an action project, and we are going to begin with the John Wick franchise, John Wick 1 through 4. And that's how we'll round out the year on Mondays and round out the month on Mondays and Wednesdays. And, I'm so very excited, but, yeah, keep coming back and go see Monkey Man this weekend and come back and listen to us talk about it. But yeah, I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And remember, peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Dev Patel.